morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett. And on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here today to this program. We're going to be talking a bit about the reorganization of human services in Onondaga County. But first, of course, it's been an exciting week. We've had elections, and I want to congratulate everybody who participated, including all of you, I'm sure, who voted, and those of you who ran for office, and those of you who campaigned for people who ran for office, and those of you like Pam Hunter who are now going to be in office in a couple of months. So congratulations to you all. Congratulations, Pam, over there. And I don't see Linda Irvin here, or else I would. Peggy Chase.
Yeah.
There you go. So anyway, I also want to thank Dean Gonzalez, and George Kilpatrick, who filled in for me last week while I was out of town, and also Rob Simpson, of course, and to remind you that if you missed last week's program, that it is on the WCNY.org website. And I've listened to most of it. I didn't get to your questions yet, so I can't grade you on those. But don't...
Seriously?
But don't forget that, again, we are on WCNY Sunday at 8 p.m. and then posted to their website. So that's great. You also remind you that we have just a few weeks left to this year, two more weeks in November, and then we go 2 weeks in December, and you've had that schedule, and it's also on the TMR website. You can always find the schedule for the month, and we have December up there also. I will also give you a heads up that we have rescheduled Congressman Maffei for when we come back from winter break, which will be January 30th, so just so that you know. And I also hope to reschedule the OCRA presentation as they proceed with their negotiations on the contract. You'll remember, though, that a couple of weeks ago, Chief Fowler was here. And one of the things that he mentioned when someone asked him, well, when you had this problem, how did you address it? And he said, well, when I have a problem, I go to the smartest person I know, the most helpful person I know. And so that's what I did. I went to the same person, Ann Rooney, and her Commissioner David Sutkowy, when I found out when I was away this past weekend that our speaker, OCRA speaker, couldn't make it. And I said, I know that we want to hear about the reorganization of human services, and if I had thought about it earlier, I would have scheduled you, so this was meant to be. So thank you, Ann. Ann Rooney is the Deputy Commissioner for, Deputy County Executive for Human Services at Onondaga County, and you have in front of you a list of all of the departments that are under that are her purview. And of course, one of her right-hand people, although right now sitting on her left, is David Sutkowy, who is the commissioner of the Department of Social Services, at least at this moment. I think he still is.
Yes.
Maybe for another month or so. So take it away, Ann and David. And again, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Sandra, and thank you for having us here today. As Sandra mentioned briefly, we are pinch hitting, and the track record for pinch hitters isn't that great, so go a little bit easy on us. And just as we get going, and David and I have made this, we've done this presentation several times, but we can really get going. So if you have a question in the middle of what we're saying, please just raise your hand and interrupt us. I think we do better answering questions and trying to explain this anyway. So again, thank you. I think I know I see so many faces out here who have heard about this, who will be impacted by this, whether you're from a community-based organization, you may be a county employee, you are our right-hand people like Judge Hanizak, one of our family court judges, Esteban Gonzalez at the Justice Center. There are so many people here who, when we put this idea together over a year ago now, are going to be impacted besides all the people that we serve in Onondaga County, which is really the main focus of what we are attempting to do here. So for just a little bit of history, we have simplified this as much as it can be simplified on these two pieces of paper. And what we wanted to do, and just Peggy Chase, this is for you because you're going to be living this, so congratulations and thank you. I wanted to put, David and I wanted to put the current structure on the second page because really now that is the history of Onondaga County, and what you see on the top page is as of January 1st, this is how Onondaga County will be operating. This is the way we are organized. The charter has changed with the support of the county executive, the county legislature. So this is where the future is for Onondaga County. But just if you could look at that second page very briefly, Onondaga County, like many of the other 61 counties in New York State, is organized very traditionally and has been since its inception. It is nothing other than this is just how it was. I don't think there was anything to it other than that. And when we now look at that structure, we have over this past year, really past several years, really discovered that the way we are organized is not necessarily to the benefit of those in our community who are trying to access our services. So we looked at this, and really when you hear things like Department of Mental Health, you know, detention center, things like that, it was really, if you will, deficit focused rather than focusing on how we could integrate our services going forward to have the best outcomes for children, family, adults in our community. So what we did, we, David, myself, and five other department heads from the County of Onondaga, and I have to say, I'm the newcomer on the block. I was appointed with County Executive Joni Mahoney in my current position. The Onondaga County is very blessed with the personnel that serve you every day. The department heads that we have on this human services side, they could not be any more dedicated to the people that they serve, and that, I think, is what has allowed this transformation to occur. We are not in a crisis. You have heard this. You know, the nation, since 2008, has really turned on its head. Onondaga County has weathered this storm financially better than others. And if you look at financial indicators of counties across the state, Onondaga, because of the stewardship of Nick Pirro and John Mulroy before him, financially we are on sound footing. So what we are doing here was not crisis-driven in any way, shape, or form. It was because as we put our best thinking together, it really is the right thing to do for children and families in our community, to integrate our services so outcomes can be better. So what we did, a group of us went to Georgetown University last year, and I feel very proud to say that. So, but we went to Georgetown for a year and participated in a capstone project that we're still working on. And one of the things that came out of this, it has been apparent, I think, to a lot of us. We work very, very well together. But if the personalities changed, that could change. And what we discovered was, and really I think a little bit of an epiphany, we have to change our organization because if the personalities step away, what we are germinating here has a possibility of falling by the wayside. So we go to Georgetown, we participate in this capstone project, and it quickly became apparent, I think, to all of us that we have to focus all of our best efforts, put all of our resources on demographics. Children and families over here, adults and all the services that they require over here, and not segregate, oh, here's some mental health services for children, here's some for adults, but rather do our best to put all these services in one place. So if a family with a child who's struggling comes to Onondaga County, they don't have to figure out, who do I call? What do I do? So we have set up, as you see then on the first page, a Department of Children and Family Services, where we are integrating all of the services that children and families would be able to access in one place. And I'm proud to say that this gentleman sitting next to me, he will be the commissioner of that Department of Children and Family Services. And you can see what's under it now, Child Protective, which I think everyone is familiar with, and our Children's Mental Health Project, which is OnCare, our Youth Bureau, our Children's Mental Health, so we're extracting that out of the Mental Health Department, and our Juvenile Justice. when I was here a couple weeks ago and Sandra referenced Chief Frank Fowler, a question came up from someone in the audience about the recent burglaries we've had from young people in our community. And Frank's answer, and I think it's another sign of how we are all working together. They asked, you know, what are we going to do about this? And Frank's answer was, when that child woke up that morning, he probably was thinking, oh, today's the day I'm going to go rob houses. But he said, and this is how we are tailoring our work, 20% of that activity was probably him breaking into that house, doing what he did that upset so many people's lives. The other 80% of it is what happened to that child in his or her life leading up to that, that would think, allow him or her to think it's okay to break into that house and participate in that activity. So that other 80% that Frank referenced, that we work with him, you know, the judges, everyone, is what we're trying to address. So those decisions that a 12-year-old child makes, perhaps we can intervene in a more positive, constructive way so he or she never makes that choice. So if you can think about it in those terms, that's where we are trying to focus our efforts. So, and I apologize that I just could go on, and David, interrupt me at any point. So, no. So that's where we're focusing on our children and family side. And what we are doing is taking folks who were, and I have to say, we are upsetting a lot of county employees' lives right now, and it's become very a reality. We're picking people up, moving them to new locations, and we have to be overly sensitive to that, and we are trying to be. And because people worked in this department, now they're over here, and this is all going on very rapidly. So then you have our Department of Health, which is right now they have a lot of activities with children and families. They right now have a dotted line to this new department, but as time goes on, this is not the end of the day for restructuring in Onondaga County. More things will happen. We did this part because we thought this is about as much as we can, you know, bite off this year. Then what you have always heard of, the Department of Social Services, which David is the commissioner, and Sarah Merrick, who is a, I think, a lifelong member of the Thursday Morning Roundtable. But Sarah Merrick, who you may all know, she will be effective January 1st. Once Peggy votes for her back there, she will be appointed commissioner of our new Department of Social Services. And we couldn't ask for someone who is more dedicated. So. But what we've done, if you think of the Department of Social Services and what that department was responsible for, it was all the child protective work. It's all the public benefit work that you are hearing so much about with Medicaid redesign, food stamps, HEAP, all of those things, plus all of our adult work. That was far too large, and the what they were charged with doing was very disparate in terms of the outcomes that were expected. So we've extracted all of just the public benefit, put them in one place, and pulled the other pieces out of it. And again, Sarah, we're thrilled to have you as our new commissioner. Department of Corrections will largely stay intact. And then also, we're seeing in our community, this Department of Adult and Long-Term Care Services, more and more challenges that vulnerable adults are experiencing, especially since 2008. I think if we've seen several studies where adults and children in this new economy that we're experiencing, and from an economic point of view, are the most challenged. And so what we're seeing are the co-occurring, if an adult who is very, very vulnerable oftentimes has mental health issues, housing issues, you name it, they're in that bucket. But our departments weren't set up to address those issues in a centralized, focused way. So that's what we're doing here. And I think several weeks ago, Bob Long, our Commissioner of Mental Health, was here, and he is our expert in the field on Medicaid redesign. He is going to be the commissioner of that new department. So there will no longer be a Department of Mental Health. All of the services will be here, but not a formalized department, and he will be responsible for that. So as we go forward, that's our new organization, but as we go forward, having all these folks putting their best efforts together working on this is, I think, what we want to have happen at the end of the day, that we are able to react to not be so reactive to situations. We right now will get a hotline call for a child in particular, you know, with some allegation of abuse. We go out, we look at the situation, we stay involved for a very short amount of time, and then we're out of the picture. And we don't do a lot to figure out what is going on with that child and family. And what we have found is that for about a year or so, the family will be fine, but then they slip back into the same things that were the original genesis of the call. So we're trying to do more things that allow us to be proactive, work with children, families, and also I can't say enough for the partnership we've established between the school districts, particularly the city school district. We have a lot of county contracted workers inside school buildings providing mental health services, providing child protective services, and that in large part is our collaboration with Say Yes to Education has allowed a lot of this to occur. So I would like to just turn it over to David because he has the pearls of wisdom from all of this. Notice his white hair. But we are very, very blessed as a community to have a commissioner like David Sutkwe. He really has been, over these last 6 years that I have worked for the county, he's kind of been that guidepost to say, we can do better, we should do better, we have to do better. And so I'm just so pleased that he's willing to stay on and help all of us with this effort. And David, take it away.
Thanks, Ann, and good morning, everyone. To begin with a point of clarification, when Sandra said that she turned to the smartest person that she knew, she was referring to Ann, not me. You know, not wanting to make a reference to my gray hair, I've been around a while. This is the best thing I've worked on, I think, in my career. This is much needed, and it is just a fantastic opportunity for us who work in government to provide the best service we can to citizens in need. And I mean this very sincerely. All the credit goes to County Executive Mahoney. We didn't have to do this. She didn't have to take the risk to do this. The safe play would have been not to do this, just to continue what we're doing to get by. I was reading a book this summer, and I came across a French word, débrouiller, which means to get by. You know, the English version is to muddle through. We could have done it. We could have just continued what we're doing because nothing was wrong. As a matter of fact, many things were right. You know, if you look at the numbers that we generate in our child welfare area and juvenile justice, numbers are fantastic. The number of children who, for instance, in child welfare, the number of children who reenter the system, either subsequent hotline reports or reentry to foster care are very, very low. Same is true with juvenile justice. A lot of things are going well. They're just not going good enough. And we wanted not to settle. We wanted to push ourselves and to reach for a higher standard. And that's what this is all about. And really, the credit goes to the county executive and Ann for pushing this, for supporting in this, and for taking the risk. You know, there's a lot of pieces that have to move. And again, didn't have to do this. There's no financial crisis. There's no crisis in the service delivery system that motivates this. This is about reaching to a higher standard. And the credit goes to the county executive primarily for this. You know, just I'll make a couple points because it's certainly more fun to, you know, to talk with people than just to lecture. But we really do think we can, by this reorganization, we're going to do a far, far, far better job in coordinated services to children, families, and adults who are currently active with us. You know, think of what we do as a jigsaw puzzle. And, you know, you have two pieces that they almost look alike, and they almost, you know, their color is the same, and, you know, they all have the same, you know, dimensions. And you put them together, and they don't quite fit, and so you kind of, you know, push down harder to make it fit. but it's not the right piece. And to some extent, that's what we've been doing. You know, we all play well together. The commissioners of the various departments, we get along great, and we work very well together. But we're the same is true with staff. But we're subject to different state mandates. There's different pressures on us to all move somewhat in different directions and at different speeds. We have different information systems between DSS, probation's juvenile justice, the Youth Bureau, the OnCare system of care, which is going to join this effort. We have five different information systems, none of which talk to each other. And so it flies in the face of good, effective coordination. So one of the main reasons for doing this is, you know, in a more deliberate, thoughtful way, organize these disparate services so that they're all pointed in one direction, they all fit together, so we're not trying to force a coordination, we're making it more fluid and seamless. The ultimate benefit is for the families. If we can get to a point where our staff are really working together, who are involved with the same families, and we're finding that there's a huge number of families that are at this point in time receiving services from juvenile justice, child welfare, involved in the mental health system. If we can all get on the same page and move in the same direction administratively at the point of case handling, we can do a far better job working with families. And the second point is one that I'm really excited about. You know, Anne is right. You know, we want our interventions to be transformational. I'm not sure I would say that's true. You know, families come to our attention when they're struggling, and we help them improve their lives. When they exit the system, most are better off, but many come back. And you know what? It's just not good enough. It's not good enough anymore. If you look at what's happening, and I just want to make this one point. If you look at what's happening in American society, you know, we don't have manufacturing jobs any longer. You know, 1970, 50% of jobs in America were manufacturing. Today it's less than 7%. You know, the graduation rate in urban the school system, you know, can be less than 50%. Where are children going if they don't have a solid educational foundation? Where are they going in our economy if the issues that they're addressing or they're dealing with in their family lives are interrupting their ability to stay in school, to succeed in school? Where are they going to go? And so that's what we want to do. You know, we don't want just to, you know, pat ourselves in the back and say, you know what, we had a successful intervention. You know, the person's exited our system. They're no longer working with us. You know, we want to make sure that the child is on the path to success. And so that they're, you know, that they're going to finish their childhood, not at this isn't going to play for the radio by any means, not at this level, but at this level, a higher level. You know, so that they have a better chance of staying in school, succeeding academically, graduating, going on, you know, to college or whatever, so they can really make it in this economy. That's the only pathway that I know. You know, last year during the budget preparation, and I'll stop at this point. You know, I was talking with Ann, and we had done a. We looked at the number of individuals who are receiving benefits through our public benefit system, cash assistance, food stamps, also known as SNAP, Medicaid, and we asked what's the educational level of individuals receiving assistance. We have about 6,000 cases of cash assistance in Onondaga County.
37.
The number of families who have graduated from high school and receive benefits. 37. Kind of in other words, a college degree is a ticket to financial independence. You know, if you don't stay in school, if you don't succeed academically, the likelihood that you're going to be somewhat connected with the public benefit system in the long term and dependent upon upon these benefits to make it, to live lives in poverty, is far, far, far higher. So we want to transform our interventions, not just to do, you know, a better, more deliberate, more coordinated intervention with families that are currently working with us, but really start positioning ourselves to stay with families longer and do what we can to help help children and families on a pathway to success in their family life, in their community life, in academics. That's what we would like to do. Thank you.
Can I just add one thing before we go to questions? And David just got back yesterday from vacation and is part of this planning. This is how much we think of him. We are moving people all over, and I was looking at the schematic yesterday because his office was actually moved yesterday. And on it, it said, David Sutkowy, storage room. I was like, perfect. And he successfully moved into his storage room yesterday. So
there's a metaphor there, but I just think of what it is, though.
Thank you for the quick overview. My question goes to, I see the target is to get a more efficient delivery system as the net result. But whenever you do a reorganization, people want to think in terms of it's going to be more cost efficient, you're going to spend less money. My question really goes to, are you just going to project down the road at least spending less money with a more cost efficient system, or is it really going to just cost more but be better delivery of the services you're trying to get out?
Yeah, thanks, Ed. That's a very good question. The reorganization is not intended, like you said, a lot of reorganizations are just intended to save money and all that. The focus of the reorganization is not just to save money, but to deliver services in a more effective, efficient manner. What we are already seeing, however, is when we put all the outside contracts that we have, you know, we list them, and Onondaga County's arms and our reach is very wide, and you see a lot of our community-based organization partners here in the room who are, they contract with us and they carry out the services that we're mandated to provide. When we look at how our departments were organized, and in particular a lot of these contracts, we are seeing already some duplication that we want to, I don't want to use the word rein in, but we want to make sure that what we are contracting, what we are buying, is not duplicative across the different departments, but also effective in the outcomes that we're expecting. Another part of this that I didn't outline is that we have extracted all of the fiscal people, personnel, folks that were embedded in these operating departments. If you think of a large organization, Onondaga County runs a $1.2 billion business every year. So if you think of a business that large, it's very unusual for support personnel like accountants, personnel analysts to be embedded in those departments. So what we've done as part of this is pulled all of those personnel out of there, assigned them now. We have a new division of fiscal operations in our budget office. The personnel people are going to personnel. The lawyers who were in the Department of Social Services are going to the law department. So we think over time that efficiency will probably save the taxpayer money. But what we also would like to do is not just look at it as a money savings effort, but to reinvest that savings for exactly what David was talking about, to give us the opportunity to stay with families post-intervention, to do almost like a check-in. How's your family doing? Is Johnny still on track? You know, is he still on, is he reading? Peter Knobloch, our good friend, we've been working with him about early education, having children ready for kindergarten, all of those things. So it really isn't focused on just straight cost savings, but it definitely is not intended to have us spend a lot more money either.
Have you made any plans for benchmarking success down the road from consumers, meaning both not-for-profits, direct consumers, and perhaps other governments?
Well, in the you know, each of the new departments are working on measures that are specific to, you know, to their to their activities. In the children and family world, that's we're working on that, you know, even as we speak. You know, we want this to be, we want to measure this. You know, we want to be very deliberate in what we're trying to accomplish, what our desired outcomes are, and then create an informational system that provides, you know, provides information so that we can monitor our success.
And if I could just add to that a little bit, we do have, we have benchmarked some of the very significant activities that have occurred. For instance, our detention center up at Hillbrook, where youth 10 to 15 year olds who pose a safety risk to the community, they've been accused of committing some crime, and if they're housed at Hillbrook, and this is pre-adjudication of their case in family court. What we have found, and this is was startling, and we are a little bit embarrassed that we didn't know this information before we really embarked on this effort, but we have about 300 admissions on an annual basis to our detention facility. When we looked at each of the children in there in this past year, of those 300 children, fully 75% of them had had their family or them had been a victim in our child welfare system at some point in their life or currently prior to that admission. So what we're seeing is, what do we do when we see, and we all know what comes out of the child welfare system and abuse, all of those things, but what leads that child to go from being a victim to a perpetrator, and how do we prevent that? Because we'll see, there may be seven times we've had interventions with that child and family regarding juvenile justice issues before they're incarcerated at Hillbrook, if you will. So what are we doing prior to that to prevent that family from ever having their child enter that system? So those are some of the things that we clearly have benchmarks for, and we want to see that number come way down.
Oftentimes, some of the constraints that local government has have to do with, as you mentioned earlier, state mandates and the state funding streams. I'm curious how you're able to do this kind of reorganization, given the way the state normally tells you you have to do X, Y, and Z, and the money's only going to come a certain way. Can you go into that a little bit?
It was coincidental when we were working on this. One of our parent organizations, one of the, you know, the Department of Social Services reports to several different state agencies, one of which is the Office of Child and Family Services. And as we were working on this, it was coincidental that we received an email from OCFS, Office of Child and Family Service. They had just developed a position paper on child well-being. And it was fascinating because the thinking of the state, it was remarkably parallel to what we're just talked about here. You know, they're making the argument more or less that systems shouldn't just stop. You know, intervention shouldn't just stop when a family exits. That we have to focus more holistically on the more complete well-being, long-term well-being of the child. So actually, when I read that, I said, this is just a wonderful opportunity to engage the state. And actually, Ann and I are going to Albany tomorrow to sit down with the leadership in OCFS to talk about what we're doing, to talk about what their expectations and and interests are, and to see if we can develop a partnership with the state agency, that can work with us during this intervention. In terms of the mechanics of this reorganization, all the state agencies have been notified. The ones that we've talked to have been nothing but supportive of this. So it's working very well.
We're hoping they'll pay for it, too.
We'll convince them.
I was going to suggest that. I thought that as a demonstration, they should
our presentation tomorrow. So.
Okay, that's great. Let me just kind of follow up with that as far as notifying. So how about in terms of your interactions with your subcontractors, the nonprofits, as you say, some of whom are represented here, is that process going to change? Are they going to expect to see big changes in the way they do business with you?
I don't think they will expect big changes. I have made this presentation. I'm looking at Liz Nolan straight in the eye over there, who runs Hillside. Right, Liz? But we have made this presentation to our community-based partners as well. And we plan on, we're actually having meetings about, okay, notifying the contractors, what does this mean for your individual contracts, all of those things, because we want to be as transparent as we can about this, especially with them, because they are not just community-based organizations. They carry out the work that Onondaga County is mandated to perform. And we could not do this without them. The innovation that the community-based organizations provide, I have, you know, the size of Onondaga County, it is like sometimes feels like trying to move a mountain. But they're able to call us, call me, call Dave and say, can we try this? I think this might work. And we're trying to be as receptive as possible to the ideas that they have, because I came from the Salvation Army before my job here, and what I saw there and what I know exists in all of our community-based organizations is, in large part, clients are much more comfortable walking in through the doors of a Catholic Charities or a Salvation Army than they are through the doors of the Civic Center. A lot of what we do can be considered punitive in nature, especially in our child welfare area. So if a family walks through those doors at the Salvation Army, they'll find a daycare center, they'll find a food pantry, they will find adult work with adults, they will find just a whole host of services that probably is a little more comforting than walking through the doors of the Civic Center. So we consider them not just, you know, our contractors, they are clearly our partners. So if any of them are feeling the strain of this, that we haven't been as communicative as we should have, I would like to hear that, but we clearly want them, and I think they understand the role that they play. And now I wanted to say it publicly if they didn't. So thanks, Sandra.
I don't really know how many children are involved in foster care, but I'm wondering where it fits in this new schema and whether or not you could explain how a child in foster care would have some kind of mechanism that would link the various services that David's going to be orchestrating.
Take it away. The foster care system would be part of the new Department of Children and Family Services. Currently, there are about 250 children in foster care in Onondaga County. That compares with probably 820, 850, 10, 15 years ago. So the number has dropped dramatically, not only in Onondaga County, but in fairness, across the state. You know, as Ann was talking about the crossover population, children who are active in both the juvenile justice and child welfare system, you know, the deeper a child goes into the juvenile justice system, the more likely that the family has current involvement in child welfare or past involvement in child welfare. And, you know, that was kind of one of those aha moments when we looked at the numbers and the activity there that said, you know what, it's time. This is a very specific case in point to justify, provide the rationale why we not only should do this, why we need to do this. Because these systems operating independently are not producing the outcomes that we need. They're not keeping faith with the child or the family. And so we think that by, again, you know, better by merging these operations, communicating better, developing joint planning, you know, we can begin addressing the behaviors early on that might be causing, you know, more difficult, more problematic behavior of the children, causing deeper penetration into the foster care system, into the residential system of care, into, you know, deeper into the juvenile justice system. We're very hopeful. You know, in 5 years ago, there were 100 children in the foster care system. There are different levels of care. You know, the lowest level of care is with a family, a foster care family. The deepest level is in residential care. 5 years ago, there were 100 children in residential care. Today, there's probably 30 to 35. And, you know, a lot of that is keeping our eye on the ball. You know, just tweaking interventions, you know, just looking at numbers, looking at what we're doing, and, you know, making adjustments to provide better support to children and families in the community so as to minimize the need for long-term residential care. So a lot of this is, you know, it's paying attention, it's coordinating interventions. We're just going to be doing it on a larger scale now. And I think everybody is pretty, you know, now that I've moved to the storage room, right in the middle of the child welfare area, I've just been walking around saying hello to everybody, you know, introducing myself. And, you know, we're talking about this reorganization, you know, and I don't want to be falsely optimistic, but I sense a glint in people's eyes where they're saying, about time we should do this. We can do a better job. So there is a real level of enthusiasm, you know, among the staff that they really want to do a better job. And, you know, if we do our jobs as administrators, we're going to provide the, you know, the mechanism to involve them, to involve the community agencies and discussions on how this is going to happen. And we're pretty hopeful that we're going to be doing a far better job for kids.
Commissioner, this is just a quick follow to Peter's question, actually, that is sort of, you've answered already, but do you anticipate with this kind of holistic attention to the family that the census could actually come down a little bit more of children who are removed from the home? Because that can be really traumatic for a kid. I mean, I think that can inflict another injury on a child. Is the number of children removed from the houses, is that kind of now kind of automatic triggers that force that won't change, or do you think that those numbers could come down?
I'm hopeful that the number will come down. I mean, safety is always, you know, the primary concern of the child welfare system. You know, safety and permanency are the two overarching goals of the system. And, you know, if the child safety, health and safety is ever compromised, you know, to the extent that, you know, we're uncomfortable, you know, a removal and placement, either with a relative or foster care, is going to be necessary. But again, if we can do a better job with prevention, with early intervention, in coordinating the involvement of the different parties, we're hopeful that all of our numbers will track positively.
First, I want to applaud you. This is so refreshing to see a government doing something innovative and not something that is driven by a financial crisis. So this is really wonderful. But my questions are this. Two, I'm assuming from what you said earlier, are you going to be moving towards a centralized information system? And two, while you are commenting that, you know, some of the staff are really welcoming this, I'm wondering how you're working around, or is it necessary to work or negotiate with bargaining unit employees about changes in scope of services and require and their responsibilities?
Thank you. As far as the information system question, we probably aren't moving to a centralized information system, but what we're more moving towards is information systems that can talk to one another. So we're linking them together. We already, perhaps you have heard about our No Wrong Door initiative that we undertook probably 5 years ago in our huge Department of Social Services that more links, almost puts like an extension cord between the two that allows these systems to talk to one another with all the confidentiality issues, all those things we're addressing with our attorneys, of course. They never want to be left out. But we're addressing all of those issues so that our systems can talk to one another. So a child welfare worker who's been assigned to this case can look up the juvenile justice history, things of that nature. As far as working within the bargaining units that you have described, CSEA is our representative partner in Onondaga County for, I believe, almost probably 95% of the workers involved. And David and the other department heads have done yeoman's work work, sitting down with them, going over this, you know, going over Elaine Walter, used to be our Commissioner of Personnel. She's probably so happy she doesn't have to send out all these transfer letters now, transfer of function, but we are having to go through, if you think about it, seniority, how your seniority is affected, all of those things when people move across departments. But all of that, I mean, that is really getting into the weeds, but we are addressing all of those issues so that people are going to be impacted, but their livelihood necessarily and the things that they've counted on are still in place. And as part of this reorganization, we were very clear. No one was being laid off. People were just being moved, shuffled. So thanks.
I think all of us applaud your efforts to improve services to kids. As someone who's been involved with the aging community for a long time, I'm interested in what you anticipate to be improvements or changes in your Department of Adult and Long-Term Care.
It's very similar when you look at the pattern of what happens with a family in crisis with a child or an adult. There are so many instances, and these are the ones that rise to everyone's attention, where you might have a vulnerable adult who is kind of boarded up in their home, you know, gets to a certain point where services aren't coming in, family members have fallen by the wayside, and we come in to find a frail elderly person who doesn't want to go outside, isn't getting proper nutrition, has some mental health issues. And again, our services prior to this reorganization largely were our Department of Aging and Youth. And it was not just by design. It was a very tiny department without a lot of tentacles to the other county departments. So what we're seeing now, especially because mental health issues are, you know, and all of these cases, I would probably say at least 75% of those cases, there are co-occurring mental health issues when we find very vulnerable adults. So now that they will be able to draw those services in routinely, not just happenstance, because, you know, we have a really active commissioner. So Lisa Alford, who you may all be familiar with, she is our currently our Commissioner of Aging and Youth. She's going to be the deputy commissioner in this department, and so we are still going to rely on her expertise, but I just think we'll be able to bring services in a much more coordinated fashion, similar on to the children's side.
Oh, I only can ask one question. Let's see. Can I ask two? Well, let's see. I guess I would ask, how did you inform your process of change by looking at other counties, and how does Onondaga County compare to other counties in terms of level of service, quality of services, and then how are you then going to measure your results in comparison to other counties? My second question is about refugees, if you have time to address that. How will this improve service to them?
In terms of how we came to, you know, this organizational structure, we have been at this now for over a year. I described how we went to Georgetown. Then we started looking at the other counties across the state who had embarked on some of this work. And as has been pointed out several times now, we in Onondaga County are really an arm of the state of New York in much of what we do in this service area. And so when we visited other counties to see what they do, all the counties in New York State are different. You know, you have the really tiny counties who don't even have standalone departments in many of the areas that you see here, or you have a New York City, which long, long ago developed its Department of Children and Family Services. So part of what David has been doing, kind of carrying this ball for the last year, has really been in touch with the other counties. And I'm not patting ourselves on the back in any way, shape, or form, because this is all about moving forward and the attempt to do better by children, family, adults. I think we were well positioned already to do this work. And if you disagree. But I think we were well positioned to do this work from the investigated work we did with the other counties and our discussions with the state. The fact that we're going there tomorrow to discuss what County Executive Mahoney has already pushed forward, the legislature has already approved this reorganization, I think speaks volumes of the people in this community that we need to all pull this together. So that's kind of the historical perspective of it, but I think we're in good position, from almost a position of strength rather than a position of weakness, to carry this out.
Do you want to speak to the refugee issue? Is this going to change, improve refugee services any differently than services to everyone else?
I think we could talk for hours about our refugee population and the dynamic fabric they add to our community. And we have seen much, David has said this to me over and over, the refugees suffered the exact same experience with the economic turnaround in 2008 that the rest of the United States suffered. So the refugees who are coming into Onondaga County as through either Interfaith Works or Catholic Charities are folks that we see by and large coming in, they get services for a very short amount of time, but the number of them who remain on public benefits even a year after they're here, the number is much lower than the rest of the population. So we in Onondaga County, we really feel that there should be more of a celebration of the refugees coming into this community. They are not a drain on our community. If you look at the census figures that the city of Syracuse, for the first time when the census came out in 2010, the population in the city of Syracuse had stabilized. And I think if you look at the numbers, it, by and large, it's because of the refugees that are settling in Syracuse. And I was at it was just an incredible presentation a few weeks ago about all the work that's being done around refugees. And you had Stickley there, you know, one of our, when you talk about manufacturing, that's still manufacturing that's occurring right here in our county. And they celebrate the refugees. And they, I think they had refugees from over 30 countries employed at Stickley. Don't hold me to that. But then there was landlords who were in talking about, you know, my business was suffering and then I got tapped into the refugee community and what they bring as tenants, as, you know, creating this fabric in our community. So it's something that we really hope can be celebrated and not looked at as a drain on our community.
I'm encouraged as well. Congratulations. This is great. My question has to do with what's the experience going to be like for your clients? I understand how difficult it is when you start moving people around from the staff perspective, but how will it be different and how are you informing clients about their experiences?
You know, one of the complaints that I hear from everybody, you know, is how many different people, you know, the clients, recipients of service have to deal with. You know, they're dealing with the worker from DSS who's asking this series of questions. They're dealing with the person from juvenile justice who's asking the same series of questions on a different form. They're dealing with someone from the mental health system who's asking almost the same questions and collecting the same information. And people can't keep us all straight. So if we can do a better job coordinating our own efforts, talk with one voice, use one form, you know, have a more integrated information system so that we don't have to repeat ourselves, ask the same questions on multiple occasions, it can only be, you know, not only a more efficient process, but a more respectful one with respect to the population.
Hi. I wanted to thank you for taking on what is a big change. I know how difficult it is, and I really appreciate the vision that the county has in looking at these services. What I'm wondering is, how are we doing with prevention? So before people are involved, families and children in foster care and child protective, are we doing enough to really strengthen families and their ability to be responsive and give children everything they need to be healthy and succeed?
Peggy, thank you and congratulations on your illustrious career. But no, we aren't doing enough, and that's really the focus of this, that we want to be able to have much more emphasis on prevention. So when that child is born in the hospital, that mom and dad know what's out there for them. What's, you know, how do I select the best early childhood education for my child? What's out there to assist me, whether it's our WIC, you know, for women, infants, and children? How do we coordinate those services? Because we really want this effort to prevent children and families from ever entering our official system. That's really what this focus is on, is we need to have much more emphasis on that prevention side. What I always share with Dr. Cynthia Morrow, our health commissioner, you know, she has kind of the happy department. They get to go out and do the happy things, and David not so much, but we want families to understand we really want to push much more towards that prevention side and coordinating our efforts so a worker isn't, you know, three different workers aren't taking demographic information that it happens once. Automatically, just by logical thinking, there ought to be some resources that fall down so that we can dedicate more on the prevention side.
You know, can I just add one thing before the next question, Senator? You know, I just want to offer my, you know, my thanks to for all of Peggy's, you know, support and assistance and just what you've done not only to push us to be a better Department of Social Services, but for everything you've done in the community. You've been great to work with. And in all honesty, there was a not insignificant part of this reorganization, the philosophy and the motivation of this reorganization that was based upon the conference that you and Success by Six and Literacy Coalition, and if I'm forgetting anybody else, I apologize, sponsored this past spring at Lemoyne. When the speaker talked about the early intervention and really took what I thought was, you know, the international economy and where it's going, and just brought it right down to preschool education, and it was sobering, and it just fueled our efforts to really think about this seriously. And again, if we want to do right by kids, we have to start early and provide consistent, you know, being consistently involved in their lives as appropriate throughout their life. That was a very sobering conference.
We know that poverty is one of the leading stressors in families' lives and leads them into many of the services that you offer. And we also know that being on government assistance isn't the way out of poverty. It's a temporary situation, hopefully, for many people. So where in this alignment do jobs and job training and Jobs Plus fall into this new government structure? And what's the outlook? We know it's a tough economy, but what's the outlook for getting families stabilized and then into employment?
It's always been a serious issue. You know, from where we sit in human services, you know, we don't control what's happening with, you know, global and national, you know, economic forces. You know, we deal with the reality here in the county. What I can tell you is that this year, the Jobs Plus program, Jobs Plus is the employment arm of social services, and it helps individuals who are receiving cash assistance gain work skills and find and keep jobs. You know, they're going to transition 2,000 people into employment this year, which is very good. Many of the jobs, admittedly, they're above minimum wage, but I can't say that they're substantially above minimum wage. But what this department and Jobs Plus in this county does very, very well is help families access supplemental supportive financial benefits so that they really can you know, mix these benefits with their earned income and get out of poverty. I've always kind of argued that just looking at the poverty rate is not the best measure to use in determining what's happening in the community. The National Academy of Sciences, several years ago, came up with a measure they called the alternative poverty rate, where they looked at not only wages, but various public benefits that a household now routinely uses, accesses to improve their financial situation. They also looked at certain costs that are regional, like housing costs, that might influence somebody's financial standing. And in 2008, the official poverty rate, according to the census in Onondaga County, was, I think it was about 15%, 14.8, 15%. If you look at it by this alternative rate, it dropped 40%. It was just over 7%, which is really good. And that's, you know, that's a real credit to Jobs Plus and the folks in TA who ensure that if somebody is getting a job, they're they're continuing access to food stamps, they're continuing access to child care subsidies, have access to health insurance, because many of the employers that are hiring individuals leaving welfare don't offer health insurance. Earn income tax credits. This community does a fantastic job helping individual low-income families access low-income tax credits. Child support, you know, another good connection. There's a lot of solid connections that provide support to individuals who are working. Families who are working are always better off working than being on cash assistance exclusively, always.
Before I thank you, I want to issue an invitation right now for you to come back next year and talk to us about how things are going and what you're finding. But right now, for all you do and also for being here this morning, thank you, Ann Rooney and David Sutcliffe.